continue with our meeting. As an ad hoc committee that is hoping violence against foreign nationals. In today's meeting, we had invited the South African Trade Union COSATU, the Congress of the South African Trade Unions, COSATU, and the Unions of South Africa, the Federations of Unions of South Africa, FEDUSA. We also invited the representatives of Union Zamoye. The purpose of this meeting is to get the views of the structures that are on the ground, those that represent the media, the labor movement, and those that represent the structure community. And the purpose is to get their understanding on the causes of the violence that was directed to foreign nationals. The reason for that is that one, we would want to know whether there has been such a violence in the places that the organization operates, and what is your view about the actual causes of that violence. We distinguish from the violence itself and the causes to the violence. In meeting with the provincial structures like in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, we interact with the officers of the seniors in those two provinces, as well as they were highly affected, and as well as the officers of the municipalities. In our program, we have also I scheduled to meet with the state of Cape Town so that we can get the perspective. We will be coming to meet with them and present their point of view. We are also going to interact with the Chamber of Commerce of KwaZulu-Natal County and also here. Our view is that we are tasked to look at probing the violence against foreign nationals, not to just look at what happened on a particular day and what was the reaction then after that incident had happened. Yes, we are looking at what happened, which would tell us what actually sparked the violence on a particular day. And what happened, what was the reaction of police, and that information we got from the police and people that have come. But we move further to say, what actually causes a conflict between the foreign nationals and the South Africans? And we have, we would be interested to hear what you are saying. And we appreciate that you have come. We do have some apologies that we will take from the secretary. Can we go to that item?
Good afternoon. We do have five formal apologies from Ms. Emily
an apology from the coach person. He called me from when he was in hospital in Barakone, admitted for the ear problem. We will then continue and take the total supervision.
Thanks very much, Shepherdson. Thanks to the committee for inviting us, the COSATU. We do appreciate your interest in hearing our viewpoints, our understanding of the issues. Just quick introductions. My name is Matthew, my surname is Parks, from COSATU's parliamentary office. And I'm joined by my colleague from the National Union of Mine Workers. Look at the very creative Shepherdson. I'm joined by my colleagues from the National Union of Mine Workers in Kosovo and Masiza. We have specifically wanted NUM to join us, not just as an affiliate of Kosovo, but because historically a large membership of NUM has come from neighboring countries. So they are keenly affected by the challenges of violence and violence against foreign nationals, and the whole issues of migration, etc. Even NUM's predecessors, the African Mine Workers Union in the 40s. So we are honored to include them in that race as Jefferson. I think that we've submitted our written documents, I won't read it, I think that of all members, but I'm just going through a summary of it in the PowerPoint presentation. I think, Jefferson, in terms of the historical context, I think we'd want to say that most African borders are artificial creations. Your board have listened to the recent creation of 130 years ago, which is impacting negatively upon the natural migration of South African people. You said the same thing about Swaziland or Botswana. And of course, you would know that these were creations by the British at that time to keep land away from the Afrikaner republics. And there was no consultation, no logic upon these borders that are imposed upon South Africa, modern South Africa. But it has a significant impact economically upon us today. I think also what's important for our understanding is that the mining industry, which is the backbone of our economy historically, has been based on cheap migrant labor from Malawi, from Lesotho, from Mozambique, and then of course more recently from the former Transkei, etc. And this is done in a very brutal way, where people were just taken, asked in, or taken in by train from the neighboring states and just brought in. And our economy was based upon their hard work. I think, Chair, much commentary rather has been made about the historical debt that South Africa owes to our neighboring states for the liberation struggle support. I think, Chair, we would acknowledge and appreciate that, but I think amongst that we would in particular highlight, if one could say, our legacy towards Namibia, which colonized for many years, which imposed an apartheid system upon the poor Namibians. And of course, I think Shepherdson must acknowledge the debt to Angola and to Mozambique. Angola, which suffered a brutal invasion by the apartheid regime in 1975 up until 1990, simply because they supported the ANC and MK. Mozambique, as you know, suffered repeated devastation through the former South African government's support of RENAMO. And I think we can never really sufficiently pay that debt we owe to those three countries in particular. And in fact, we want to suggest to government that we look at active measures to assist those three countries in particular in terms of investing there, assisting Angola, Mozambique with removing the landmines, etc., etc. I think we also sensitive to how the former apartheid regime exploited neighboring states' labor and their regulatory reforms. Chair, you would know that COSATU is a socialist federation. So for us, we also believe that the development of urban slums in former areas grew about because of African workers in the rural areas being forced to come and work in the cities so they could pay your various taxes by the colonial governments. Of course, here we're still dealing with the legacies of under education, where African labor was deliberately given poor education to remain low skills. Without stating obvious, Chair, for us as COSATU, key issues is our 54% unemployment, our jobless growth largely, massive levels of poverty, and us being the most unequal country in the world. Of course, Chair, you remember that the former president, Thabo Mbeki, had articulately captured the two nations concepts of a rich, developed, largely white society and a largely poor, underdeveloped African society. I think one of the important issues for us is the issue of violence. And I don't think it's just limited due to foreigners. I think we are violent as a society, whether it's soccer matches, whether it's alcohol abuse and stabbings on the weekends, whether it's our reckless driving, whether it's how we treat women with high levels of domestic violence. I think South Africa is still a very violent society. I think Chair would want to say this is part of the legacy of the brutality enforced upon people through apartheid, through colonialism. We've been told that violence is a way of expressing ourselves, unfortunately. So yes, there was massive violence or shameful violence against foreigners, but I think Chair, that shame is across the board. It's across when you go to day hospital on the weekend and you see so many stabbing victims because of alcohol abuse. I think, of course, also our economy is struggling to grow because of our low skill base. Sure, I think we highlighted the migrant labor system, and that you've had many countries' economies, like Lesotho, being based upon their citizens finding work in our mines. The same for Malawi, from the Swazi economy, largely dependent upon Swazi revenues, but also upon Swazis coming to Mpumalanga to work in the forestry plantations, work in their gardens, etc. I think Chair also works for us, sparks, to help address your question of the violence, is the competition for scarce resources. If you have a society where one out of three people is unemployed, where the majority of migrant labor from Zimbabwe, from Nigeria, from Malawi, etc., is living in your informal areas, that's what we thought really sparks the issue. I think Chair, we really want to highlight the role of business. We feel that business is often preferring to employ migrant labor, which is often illegal, from neighboring countries, because they know that labor is illegal. If they make a noise, they can be dismissed. They've got no recourse to the law. If they complain about low wages, they can just call Home Affairs and remove the Zimbabwean farm worker, or can remove the Malawian domestic worker. And of course, they know that often your migrant labor is not going to join a trade union. It's not going to make a noise about the abuses of labor rights, etc. So we find this phenomenon, Chair, especially in Limpopo on the farms. Where farmers who go to recruit Masina, cheap Zimbabwean labor, pay them much less than they pay South African labor, and if they make too much of a noise, they'll just call Home Affairs and kick them out. I think that the issue of violence also, we feel that we have got high levels of crime across the board, not just foreigners. Our levels of crime is just far too high, but obviously it's especially high in townships and in informal areas. So you can see, for example, in Cape Town, the highest crime area is your Khayelitsha, it's in Yanga, it's Govilletjes, Crossroads, it's Mellenberg. Those are areas where you find large concentrations of migrant labor, illegal migrant labor. You won't find them obviously in Constantia, for example. I think just in terms of the international context, maybe we can be a little bit more less diplomatic than government can be. We know government is going under pressure of diplomacy, but we can really see our country being overburdened by the collapse of Zimbabwe's economy. That is, Home Affairs is saying today they estimate there's about 5 million foreigners living in South Africa, of which they estimate about 2 million are from Zimbabwe, at least, depending on that. And that's largely the consequence of Zimbabwe's economic and political crisis. We feel it's quite unfair that our government and society have been left to this burden of cleaning up after Zimbabwe's crisis. Again, Chair, one can also ask politically, what is it that causes so many Nigerians, Malawians, Burundians, Somalis to come to South Africa? We shouldn't be commemorating our own democratic successes. And here we also, to be honest, Chair, to be glad we feel these countries' governments are too happy to chase their citizens away to let us deal with it. It's not fair on us, Chair. No matter how many successes our government will make, your government can create 10 million jobs. Another 5 million Zimbabweans will come. It's not a solution. I think, Chair, I think we'd really love a situation where those governments can take responsibility for their citizens. They can't simply export their problems to us. We've seen the recent political crisis in Burundi, where South Africa spent so many years from the Dealist government in the 90s, assisting Burundi to resolve its political economic crisis. Today, you have a Burundian government which is unashamedly facing a political crisis, and as a consequence, there are now about 40,000 refugees fleeing Burundi over this past month. The Chinese government hasn't got an easy task, and its government can't always speak honestly to our neighboring states. So what I would mention is kind of in particular that often there's this attack on South Africa that we're not grateful for the support that other countries gave us, but we are. But we want to separate and distinguish. I'm not sure what the reason for people to leave Pakistan, Bangladesh, and come over two continents to South Africa. When will those governments take responsibility for their crises? We will separate them, Chair, as in from the example of Namibia, where we do indeed have a serious moral and political legacy, or Mozambique, Angola, etc. I think, Chair, when South Africa had refugees, we did not move to Bangladesh or Pakistan. Yeah? So I think the media coverage needs to be a little bit sensitive, without being seen to be a bit flippant, Chair. I think we also want to distinguish between political refugees who might be bringing assistance, but also economic migrants. South Africa cannot accommodate the whole world. There has to be the right balance between the two. We're not saying we want to behave like North Korea and close the borders, but we have to get the right balance between our domestic responsibility and between our relations with the rest of the world. I think Chair would also, without sounding like a broken record player, would want to highlight Homolka's massive capacity challenges. We know the huge legacies of corruption and incapacity there. Though we are appreciative of government's progress in the last 5 years of turning home affairs around slowly, we hope we're on the right track. We're hoping this new border management agency would assist in this challenges. I think, Chair, maybe to try to assist the committee, our thoughts are on the way forward. I think one for us, Chairperson, we must establish a rule of law. We can't literally have the scenes of chaos which we've seen for so long. We know the media and NGOs have criticized Operation Fiela, and we appreciate criticism. We feel criticism is good to help government keep on its toes and stick to its mandate, etc. But at the same time, Chair, we also feel it's good government must take initiatives. We can't have the situation of anarchy in Hilbra or even in Belleville CBD that we have today. So government must take action. If citizens or people are worried about government because they're holding drugs or they're illegal, that's not government's fault. Government must implement the rule of law. I think, Chair, we would want to highlight the triple challenges that we must deal with job creation, we must deal with poverty and inequality. But again, Chair, other countries must assist us in that regard. I think, Chair, also that maybe we mustn't forget about our own internal migration challenges from the rural area to the cities. If you look at Gauteng's population in 94, I think it's about 6 million. I think today Gauteng is about 12, 13 million. It's overtaken KwaZulu-Natal as the largest province. And that obviously puts additional burdens on those city centers, your Gauteng, your Durban, your Cape Town, etc. So of course we would want to support urge government to do more about investing in the rural areas, industrializing the rural areas. But at the same time, Chair, I think we'd want to support government's efforts in SADC, in the African Union, about creating industrial zones in the region, supporting our neighboring states, etc. I think, Chair, we would really want to add our voice to please for good governance in our neighboring states. No matter how much good our government may do, it's not going to work if Zimbabwe cannot get its house in order, or Swaziland cannot sort out its political challenges, or Somalia is allowed to remain a governance state for 25 years, etc. Chair, if I can be a little bit provocative, I think we must look at the issue of the student Swaziland. Ingram is here, so I can't say that Ingram has once called for the role of the future of the student to be dissipated. And it is a very bold thing of Ingram to say, but I think maybe, Chair, maybe in a more constructive way, we could say Lesotho has a very little economic base. Its citizens are forced by the very nature of Lesotho's economy to come and work in the Free State arms or in the Free State mines, in the mines of Gauteng Northwest. There must be some special, I don't know if it's a simple solution here, but there must be some special arrangement with Lesotho and Swaziland. We know in 1994 government did a quite good thing of providing citizenship to the Lesotho mine workers who had lived in South Africa for decades. I think it was about 200,000 or 300,000. Who are given citizenship at that time. But again, it also implies that the government of Lesotho Swaziland must come to the party and assist us in finding a proper solution. I think in conclusion, Chair, conclusion. Maybe the opposition party might want to feel confused, but that's fine. But no, conclusion there. We wanted to see how can we assist governments in providing joint solutions. So I've seen governments, labor, business, and civil society. Yeah, there must be joint solutions on discussions at parliaments, discussions in NEDLAC, etc., to deal with what we view as super challenges of unemployment, poverty, inequality, the skills development challenges. But of course, I think really we must be assisted by neighboring states and starting in the AU with political reforms, job creation. And of course, as we said, rule of law must be implemented. Government mustn't be shy about implementing the rule of law. And then I think, Chair, lastly, that businesses must assist us. They can't just go and hire and exploit cheap migrant labor from Lesotho or Zimbabwe because they know those that labor won't object to labor abuses. Thanks, Chairperson. Hopefully we didn't take too long. You're happy to answer questions, and hopefully we've assisted the committee, Chairperson. Thanks.
If you have no time constraints, I would approach this by having all the presentations before we end the discussion. And also to say that Fedusa has responded by saying that they would want to make a written submission. They don't want to come and make a presentation. Can we have Imzama?
Good afternoon to everyone in the house, and my name is Samgera Welcome, and I live in Aubrey, in this called Mizamuid, and I'm a South African. Let me first thank the whole community, the whole committee, who have managed to have brought us here today. I'm very shocked and surprised that I'm here. I wish I was doing my own video to show to my children who I was sitting with today. Nevertheless, let me take this opportunity to thank and to greet you all, and thank the ad hoc committee for giving us this very important platform to come and brief you about what happening in our country, which is labeled as xenophobia, but it's not. Firstly, as a South African citizen and a community member, leader of Ahau Bay, wishes to clarify the confusion that suddenly comes up. The confusion that it has been going on in some areas of the country. As a community of Ahau Bay, we were so fortunate not to have experienced such a brutality which was taking place in the other areas. In our community, we live with a huge number of foreign nationals from different countries. If I may state that out, it will be Malawians, Nigerians, Congolese, Angolans, Zimbabweans, even Chinese, Tanzanians, people from Lesotho, Mozambicans, and Somalians. And we all know that everyone who lives in our community is protected by the law of South Africa. You know, whether we come from other countries or South African, we are still protected by our law. But while it is like that, we believe that there is a lot that the government can do, try and curb this situation that was in other areas. For instance, when people said there was a xenophobia, we didn't translate that it was a xenophobia. We saw people who were fighting for unregulated resources. And and our wish as South Africans is to see our government taking a stand in all the businesses that are foreign owned, to be taxed, also to ask that all the people who come from other parts of Africa or of the world have documents to be in the country, so that if they are in the country, can be legally so. We wish to state out that the employers in the domestic area now it's you know, residential, like in Albury, a lot of ladies are working in the kitchens and all this. We feel that those people are employing those people, which is domestics, are contributing to the problem that we're having. Because they take people who are undocumented most of the time. If you come into Albury, you'll see scores of people standing in the traffic light, giving little, you know, at the top of themselves, I can do this. You must remember that these people, they cannot complain. If they get exploited or anything, they take whatever they can. Because the situation point to that, you know, they are there and they want to scramble whatever they can. Now, that takes the South African population, including me as a leader, to see the other way. But the reason that people keep saying that people hate people, there's nobody who's hating other people. South Africans don't hate people. It's only that how things are happening and how things are done currently result into disagreements. Sometimes they become self-healing. Because the issue of jobs and the issue when you are like me, it's a struggle of every day. It's a survival of the fittest. When now you come for a small thing that we have, we are trying to run a business and someone just know that you want to try and end living there. It's just a the thing that you are saying about friends is provocative in terms of after the communal level. So I think that if the government maybe can look at that as a sum, of the costs for this. But I think also the words that have been used when there was this fighting somewhere around, I think it was in Devon or, but somebody stood up in the media and said the reason South Africans are checking them is because South Africans are lazy. I disapprove that because that was not a good statement to go. Because if a person was so much of a person who's not lazy, should have stick with things that he could take his good contribution so that as a lazy South African, he can stay wherever he is and contribute, to his community if he thinks that we are lazy. But nevertheless, I think that it is a good thing that the committee was formed to try and check what is. What is that can be done? For me, I would wish that Mrs. Lindy Ozuma, I believe she's leading the small businesses things. Maybe they can have a look on how they can regulate businesses that are in the townships to see that everybody who is there get a fair share of life so that we not to see each other differently the way it happens currently. But whoever that's into the township must be able to live with the people who are in the townships. Like our township, we live with plus minus 11 or 13 in foreign, national society. We do even have Chinese that lives there. They do their own business, but there's no violence in that area. I'm very happy for that. But wherever there's violence, I say there was a cause for it. Cause for that, if you can look at the resources of the country, the South Africans need to feel a bit important. I know that I'm important. Where I am today, I know that I'm important. But the other people out there as well would have to feel the same way I'm doing. I don't want you to see the decision makers of the country only when there is probably election and then that's the end of it. I would love that as you have started, you can go out with other communities, just to get what they feel, and then maybe that if it's a small contribution that I will be making, maybe you can recommend to someone who's to the decision maker that maybe if we can touch that, maybe we can go somewhere. And I am very happy to be here, and I will cherish this moment until I go to the grave. Thank you.
Thank you very much for presentation, both from COSATU and Eliva Moyet. I will now open an opportunity for members to ask questions and make comments. Honorable Samuel. Honorable Zhao, followed by Honorable Charles and Honorable Smith and Honorable Kamatlagan in that order. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the presenters who really offered their time to us to come into the presentation. We really appreciate it. Chairperson, my first question is going to go to Kosasu. Kosasu indeed has to assist the government in all costs to ensure that the government operates within the rule of law. Now, if there are concerns about the rule of law, I would really will appreciate your person if he could take and actually identify where he feels the legislation has got some loopholes, so that we are able to fix whatever loopholes that are there, or recommend on our report about the loopholes that actually contribute towards the violence. And also what he has also indicated to the committee is the role of the business. We're all aware of the role of the business, but maybe you can share with us in particular what are you perceiving you as construction, the role that can assist the government to ensure that such issues are not repeating. Now, the other issue, Chairperson, is the anarchy in Hillbrook that has been raised by the construction. I'm sure one will be actually interested, because also as this committee, we are very much interested in concern about what is happening in Hillbrook, but you mentioned that in passing. Imisa Moyet, Sebonga Puti. I'm quite touched, that we feel so powered to be in front of this committee. I am very touched. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. In this, I'll share with you, mention a very important point, unregulated resources. If you can just elaborate, because that is very critical. So you sit there, we make laws for the country. And we are aware of other things that I'm going to, but I don't want to assume that this is what you're saying. So I want to be clear. I'm sorry, also going to the last one, going back to Kusachi. Kusachi, if you had or have an experience towards the incident where the foreign nationals, they run businesses in an unhealthy environment or under unhealthy in such a way that we had a story walking around that you find that the food that is expiring, this is less than 2 days or 3 days to expire from, I'll give an example, Checkers or Pick and Pay. The foreigner, they come and they book and buy this food and deliver them to their supper shop, which means this food is not healthy. If you remember our rules towards that, so have you heard of that? If you had, can you share that with us? Can you share that?
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me start with just directly a question to Kosovo first, and say your presentation made some very telling points about the issues that you're raising before us here, and we appreciate that. On a macro level, that is at the big picture level, I think you're making some very telling points. What I'd like to hear from you is what your experiences have been from your own members, in other words, your affiliates in Kenya and Gauteng and Western Cape, as to whether when these flare-ups happened, there was a sense from them or not that the people being attacked were attacked because they were not South Africans. Because this is what we are really trying to establish. Was it just because of, as the presenter from MSMF was saying, resources that are unregulated, or was it something more than that? Was it something else that says, I don't have a job today, I'm a South African, because you have a job today and you're not a South African? That's really what we're trying to establish so that we can see whether there are issues we need to deal with. With regard to MSMF, I hear what you're saying, but let me sketch a scenario. Somebody stands up and says, South Africa is a racist country. Now, I'll be the first person to say to this guy, but they're me. You're mad. You can't have a situation like that. You can't say 52 million people are racist. Okay? And then somebody stands up to say, South Africa is a xenophobic country. The same argument would go. But could you say that there were people in Emizamo Yetu who may have attacked the people, the migrants or foreign nationals, because they were migrants or foreign nationals, or it was just, as you replied, just sheer, you know, criminal people. They just saw them as criminals, they attacked them. It just so happened that these people are non-South Africans. Is that what we're, this is what I'm trying to understand. We really want to understand what is happening here so that when we deliberate on these issues in preparation for Parliament, we really understand what you, the people of South Africa, say. And I'd like to say, I hope you have now realized that this is your Parliament and the rest of the people at any time.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the gentleman for the presentation. I just want to start by saying how ironic it is, Mr. Fox, that you say that we should go back and help Angola, Mozambique, and Namibia for all the damage that we've done, and quite right, we have done lots of damage, but they happen to be growing at three times the rate of South Africa at the moment. Their economies are booming. South Africa's economy is tanking. So I think that probably they need to give us the help rather than the other way around. But yeah, I think that you know, lots of issues have been raised here. Now, I just want to pick up on my colleague, Honourable Matal's point, which is that generalizations generally get us nowhere. And that is a problem in any analysis, that if you become too generalistic, you know, you miss out on the detail. And the detail is that we have people in this country who are absolutely welcoming of our, not just African brothers, but people from other parts of the world. And you have others that are not. And I think we've got to try and distinguish between these so that we can understand the cause of both the welcoming attitude and the antagonistic attitudes, because otherwise we're never going to find solutions. I have some questions which I think I'll just ask both of you really to give your opinions on them. First of all, I'd like to know whether you feel that the foreigners, and here I'm in danger of being offering a generalization again, but do you believe that foreigners in this country, migrants, let's call them, are on balance positive or negative in terms of their impact on society and the economy? Do they have a positive impact on South Africa? Do they have a negative impact? If they have a positive impact, or if those elements that have a positive impact are there, how do we encourage that? How do we, in fact, bring more of them in, more foreigners that actually contribute to our economy? And I say that because research has been done in Gauteng that indicates that actually foreigners into this country who run their own businesses contribute to the economies of those neighborhoods. They employ people, they create economic activity. Yes, they may not pay tax, and that's a serious issue which we need to address. And those that are a net drain on society, we need to think about what do we do with them? Do we send them back if they're illegal? Or do we just make more of an effort to stop them coming in the first place, or to stop people like them coming in who have nothing really to offer, unless they, of course, are political refugees? You know, economic refugees that are literally just pouring over the borders because they're escaping poverty and deprivation creates a moral problem for South Africa. Do we accept them, or do we not? And, you know, there was a very interesting piece of Business Day yesterday by the businessman Mark Barnes. In his column, he was talking about what do we do with migrants. And I think he made a simple point that we need to have rules and regulations that can be applied to all people. And a set of rules which are easily identifiable and can be put into action by government without too much regulation or red tape. So that's the first question. The second question is, much of the violence has been directed at businesses who are perceived as competing unfairly with South African businesses. you know, they set up their containers full of 60,000-70,000 rands worth of goods overnight. What lessons can we learn in South Africa, in the small business community, to improve our competitiveness so that we can be more effectively competing with these businesses? And then another question relates to striking a balance between economic freedoms and overregulation. And whilst we have to have a level playing field, I think we also need to recognise that small businesses across South Africa are complaining about overregulation already. And possibly it's the fact that these other businesses are avoiding the regulations that allow them to be more competitive. So this then asks the question, well, how do we, as I say, achieve economic freedom and growth at the same time having a level playing field? And then my final question is, I think that the evidence that we've seen indicates that much of the antagonism, if I may use that word, towards foreigners actually emanates from the police and Home Affairs, where they are deliberately obstructionist and cause huge anxiety amongst particularly asylum seekers. Have you noticed that in your communities? And if so, what do you think needs to be done to quell it? Thank you.
Thank you. I must also thank the presenters for their contribution. And I wish they could have gone a step further in assisting to suggest how we should do what they suggested. I'll start with I'll generalize. On page 4 of the COSATU document, you rightfully call for tightening of the jury to ensure that criminals escaping the laws of their countries are not able to hide amongst honest migrants in the asylum seekers. It's a very good statement. The question is how? How is the labor movement assisting the government? Are you likely to identify all foreigners, and how do you think that we should arrest all of them and find out if they are documented, if they are not documented, chase them out? How do you think we should do? And so on. Can you come suggestion how are the workers, including the citizens, how are they likely to assist us in this to the government? Then I come to classification. Am I correct in saying that there are four different types of migrants? There are those that are employed, labor. There are those that come as independent business people, come and run their businesses. And there are those that are big businesses who actually employ foreigners, like security companies. And there are, of course, those who come with a short cut to riches, the criminals. I agree with you that and if so, how is this category? How is each category affecting the workers in the sense? How are the employees, those who are just employed, affect the working class of this country? And if the reason, if they are affected, how would you think will be the solution to that? tumors, the paper was a big tumor. It didn't come up clear. You were saying that there are some weapons who are being employed and they've been exploited and other people. What do you suggest should be done practically by our government? The independent business people, I understand that they also have got, more particularly the Somalians, Bangladesh, Pakistanis, and Somali and Nigerians. Some of them are connected, particularly those that are connected with the wholesalers that are more in town, and they can buy from them actually their favor. How is this affecting the workers and the citizens generally? The big businesses, as I said earlier, some of them are owned by foreigners. For example, there are security companies that are run literally by people from DRC, and they employ DRC people. How is this affecting you as well? And of course, there are criminals. What is the impact of the criminals? I understand that they rob people in Iran. Apart from that, what is the effect in your work? Now you have classified these people as genuine refugees. I'm trying to find out. I've never seen a Nigerian being a refugee. I'm not saying they can't. I don't know what could be they've been running away from. And they are too far from South Africa. You have most of them, I think 8% economic reduction in almost all of them. What do you suggest we should do? Would you say, for example, those small businesses must, at least like the Zimbabweans are saying, that every foreigner, minimum, they must not have 51% must belong to the local, and 49 at least or less should be for foreigners. Is that what you suggest? What? Come up with suggestions that you think that they will solve the problem of violence and it which affects the workers, which affects you are saying that. You are saying that these workers are exploited here. They don't complain. You give them peanuts, wages, and they don't complain because they will be taken out. What is your suggestion there? How do we solve that? Are we saying that you're going to must unionize Doria foreigners? How can you unionize somebody who is illegal in the gas? What is your suggestion? Because it's why I think you are here. You are here to assist us in coming up with a report that says this is what we have discovered, this is what the people are saying, and these are the suggestions. I appreciate the thing of saying now, not that whatever it came in the way. But the key thing is that people are being attacked, and some for economic reasons. It's because you have said that's not hatred. What is the solution? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ramesh.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thank the presentation. On the COSATU presentation, but let me first deal with the I think it's a submission document. Now, I just want maybe this is just a word of clarity. I was reading through the document and I see the language. A perspective of COSATU seems to suggest that indeed there is something called xenophobia in South Africa. And you look at when the back of the page, when this means that we must do this action list, and the page 8 of the document, it's argue that perspective continuously. Now, is it a matter of a shorthand slippages of language, or is it a concrete, is it backed by concrete evidence around this particular, particularly this perspective, this notion of xenophobia and so on? And in that context, I just want to ask Chair whether there is a case that has already been made around this, or can, in this conversation that we have, persuade each other to accept that actually it's a language, it's a shorthand that has which is a slippage, because we see we must engage, we must defeat institutional xenophobia and say we will have engaged government on this issue. It may suggest that there is a foregone conclusion that there is, that therefore you already now have to take steps to do. It's not dealing with the kind of a scrambling of resources as the short slide has been presented. So that's the first case I want just to hear from COSATU on that. So secondly, on the COSATU question, when we were in KZN and we were listening to the presentation, it became quite clear and evident that the issue about two-tier labor system, if you like, the one that is regulated and one which is not regulated, which end up with the employment factors by business and cheap labor or slaves or slave wages. But the question that we did not yet interrogate a little bit more is, what is the trade union in form of COSATU do in handling this particular aspect? I guess the Labor Relations Act, as it continues to be amended, regulates the practice of employer in terms of the shop floor. So what in the bargaining council, what is COSATU doing in dealing with the employer around? Because these are the formal sector of the economy that practice this kind of practice. Thirdly, Chair, on COSATU is that the COSATU is one of the organizations with a large footprint of organized labor in the country, with hundreds of shop steward councils, shop steward on the shop floor. What I want to understand from COSATU, what are the messages that the members of shop steward are communicating to your structure? Where is a shop steward council meeting where these issues are discussed? What advice, what do you get from the workers and the members around some of the issue of the resources, scarce resources that we have? So if I would move away from that and go to thank the Ms. Amoyeko presentation, I just want to ask this question. That we had this kind of phenomenon in 2008. In 2008, it was widespread, and there was this issue about the joint business forum that included both those who were foreign nationals, because the issue was that there is the people who knows more the business, they are more skillful compared to South Africa. And there was this whole thing about forming a kind of a joint committees of business, both foreigners and South Africans, to help each other understand the ropes and the expertise. is that kind of a forum still in existence? Is it still functioning in your knowledge, or it was just simply for that period when everything went to normal, then everybody retreated back into their own shell? Or is there value for considering something that like that on an ongoing basis as a way of educating and make sure that we don't necessarily slide backwards? That's in terms of what with those kind of achievement, what is it that can we learn and going forward with that? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you for the presentation, both of the presentations. My first question would be on Kostaki. On your economic context, you talk about business exploitation, which should be taken lightly, which are also non-unified. Although together with non-unified labor, I think I'll go back also to trade. When we notice in the Gymnastos, what we notice there, people say they have the union for South African nationals. People are complaining that they were victimized because they have been, their jobs have been taken by illegal by migrants. As a result of what you are saying here in this bullet that exploitation of illegal migrant non-invited labor. But what worried us, maybe you can ask it, what worried us is that when we went there, now our people, because of intimidation, those were not expelled, were unable to speak out. They were silent because of intimidation. As a result, we can see the employer now that the employer was bold because they lost CCMA. My question is that, what action did you take in those who were expelled? And what method did you take for those who were expelled? And also, when they lost the case in CCMA, what have you done about that? Because to our understanding, the principle of also a worker, there is a principle that is very fundamental in workers, that says, worker control. If now there can be no worker control in this area, because really that is an organized sector. So what can you assist to those workers there who are spent? What can you assist them to if you come across? And then also, you talk about the high level crimes on your way forward. You talk about the high level of crime, and you talk about that the rule of law and operation failure. To the operation to take stock. Now, as of course I know you always help campaigns. Don't you think of also having a campaign, because the at the end of the day go to the communities. So these kinds, they know, because one of the companies of the South Africans were saying they stole our goods and sell them. It is even ourselves to know that I'm also one of the victims whom my laptops and printers were sold to and were stolen by foreigners who escaped because of the pay issue. In fact, that is our, we are supposed to have stricter laws so that they don't get paid and go having committed crimes here in South Africa. That depends on us as Parliament. So now, what have you got any campaigns for a reduction and reporting of stolen property, so that really you assist also, not also when you are assisting the rule of law, you're talking about the rule of law. If you want to curb violence, to curb crime, therefore it's all of us who are supposed to do something, not only the police. We are supposed to let us there have got also the right to go to their communities and then report and report stolen property too. So if we say there's high level of crime. So I thought that could be also a way forward for to assist us in those campaigns. And on page 4 of the desk document you're talking about, yes, of course, you are talking about the timing of security, so that's also, you are also, that's why I'm also talking about the time. And it can be. And then again, on the issue of in the last paragraph of this document, that is P5 now. I don't know whether SCEC, you are not contradicting yourselves when you are talking about you are trying your complexity to the situation of the struggle against xenophobia and critical element of the struggle. Alright. Do you see really as this xenophobic, looking that even in your economic, in your economic context, you did mention that some of the opportunities are the causes of violence against foreign nationals by South African nationals. Therefore, I don't know, do you think that this really xenophobia, because I see that you are still, there is a that name, because as xenophobic name is not nice for us, because we have to stay, our people have to stay with these people long, long ago with the foreign nationals. There was nothing wrong with it. They even said, my friend, even in the world, you can see them saying that there comes my friend to come and stay. Now, this, the name xenophobic really, it is strange because I don't think the foreign, the South Africans hate foreign nationals. So, now this last paragraph, do you think it is, it needs to be rephrased? Thank you, Sir President.
Thanks, Chair. And with regards to consulting, just to assist us and after welcoming the presentation, just to check whether have they conducted a research through via their shop stewards or any other form of their structures, with regards to in the form of structure. In the sectors, how many jobs that given to the foreign nationals, especially the illegal ones? We know that there is a labor turnover, like the presenter has presented now, in particularly to, for example, in the security or hospitality sector. If you have ever conducted, how many jobs are currently being been occupied by a foreign national, because that will also assist us. And then in that form, also maybe if you know that the organization of the domestic domestic workers, even though they're not, it's not a union, but they do have a relationship with COSATU, if perhaps they do have such information as well to you, given you that they can assist us. With regards to Nzama Yetu, I think that we do welcome the presenter. And mine is just all the issue of training, that we are happy that at least since 2008 now we are living in harmony. It's with regard to, do we have perhaps database yourself as an organization of, since you want to maintain the harmony in your community, of these foreign nationals, the tax shops, the informal shops that are having, how many of them do we have in the community that you are in would be, so that when we come up with the communication, maybe we can come with the intervention to assist you to continue to have that harmony, the relationship that you are having with all of them. How many types of are there versus South Africans that they do have a tax shop, so that we can strike a balance, where we have more foreigners compared to our local South Africans that are in the community. Thank you.
Can I be allowed to join the meeting? Honorable Mabur, your turn.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Kotachi, for the presentation.
Okay, sorry. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Shinsen, for the opportunity granted to me. Let me also welcome the presentation by Kosatu. I've got a few issues to raise. We are talking about fighting for scarce resources. I want to agree with Kosatu, but what do we do, Chairperson? Because with all the civic causes that we're having around the country, we are trying to empower our children who cannot go above university level. Then we have these foreigners or migrants coming to South Africa who indeed they opt for cheap labor. What do we do about the fields that we are acquiring? We are providing for our children. Because in their own capacity, these foreigners, they've got, they are plumbers, they are good carpenters, they are big layers, they've got all of these sort of skills. But what do we do, Kosatu? Can you assist us in this regard? About informal settlements, yes, you run around in the whole country, there are informal settlements, of which this government will never say, today I'm done with this program because of them. Socially, they have an impact on us as a society because they marry our daughters in community of property, which is the easy way. They get some plots there, they erect the cuckoos there. When the department allocates a budget for RDP houses, it's unfair. Then, Home Affairs, they are saying they have got some concerns on corruption. I want to check on corruption.
I think you are getting into the next phase of our engagement. We are not at this stage. What we are doing right now, we are asking questions to Kosatu and Imisa Moyetu. We are not analyzing and discussing the information that we have been gathering. We are still in a gathering process, information gathering process. Can you focus on that one?
The third question, what is Kosatu doing in terms of assisting the children that we are giving them skills in the teachers' colleges versus cheap labor? The second question, the issue of informal settlements, because they are reading it in this report, to say, with the little budget that we have, how are they assisting us in terms of making the point that the allocation that has been given to the relevant provinces is equal to what has been identified? With the challenges that Home Affairs is facing, the concerns and corruption, I want to share because recently I was living outside in Northwest. We went to Lindelane Repatriation, Lindhausen, Lindelane Repatriation Center, whereby almost everybody who arrived in the country illegally is being taken off. Whether you are from Limpopo, you are from Eastern Cape, you are from KZN and over there. That unit is responsible for making, choosing to eat that everybody who has been illegally in this country has been taken care of and departed to his place of origin. Now I want to check. With the corruption that I mentioned here in the report about Home Affairs, what measures do they think can be put in place to see to it that we get on properly as a country?
Okay, may I allow Kosatu and Mr. Moyetu to respond? Second one. Okay.
I am not saying you have not brought, you have not given suggestions. What I'm saying is that the suggestions you are bringing is more of political nature. I just want concrete. You you talking about organizing and so on. One concrete, we are, since we agree that it's more of economic nature, how can you concretely concretize the suggestions? That's all. Thank you.
Can I go on now?
Okay, thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks to members for the very useful questions. I think it is even difficult, Chairperson, to check which members from which party, because we all seem roughly to be on the same page with various nuances, but I think roughly, more or less. I must apologize, Chair, I didn't catch most of the members' names, with the exception of Honorable Mashakane, because that's because he's a former Kosatu leader, so I was blessed to know him already. I think Chairperson, the honourable member here, Flamini. Okay, thanks, Chair. Look, I think one thing is Kosatu is not in government, as much as it might give the appearance at times of being very powerful. Our role is to mobilize our members to articulate their viewpoints, to pressurize governments, etc. I think the main call from our members across the board has been about governments needs to implement the laws that it's got. We've got many good laws in South Africa. I think our main frustration with government departments across the board, not just Home Affairs, but across all departments, is that our officials are too soft at times. We don't seem to want to actually implement so many rules. We have seen a recent trend which we support in government over the past year or so about tightening the various loopholes in laws and implementation especially. So we don't really see too many legislative loopholes. Our frustration is, Chair, the laws we have not been implemented. The Labour Relations Act is ignored all the time by businesses. I think something we should do might overlap with members' responses. Businesses always cry that the legislative regime is too tight. Businesses are afraid to employ people because they can't dismiss them, right? But when we saw 2008 with the global economic crisis, we lost a million jobs in South Africa very quickly. So there was no legal prohibition for bosses to fire a million workers very quickly. Even now, we can see mining companies are threatening to dismiss thousands of mining workers all over the ship. And again, we raise the issue of about our legislative regime is too tight. Well, then once I think what part of it is too tight? Is it about the Occupational Safety and Health Act? Must we provide workers with a safe working condition? Previously you have about 300 mining workers dying every year in the month. I think there's about 100 per annum, which is still too high. If it's about the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, are we saying that we want domestic workers to work 80 hours a week? Is 45 hours too low of a threshold? Yeah? I think that the call by opposition to laws is a bit disingenuous. Businesses will make profits because they can sell goods, not because the worker has got a weekend off, but got a right not to be molested at work. On the legislation, there was a recent amendment of the Labour Relations Act about 2 years ago where it specifically stated that employers cannot use the basis of employing a migrant worker, a foreign worker, as an excuse to pay them less than other workers, local workers. That specifically was put into the LRA about 2 years ago. I think the idea from the Department of Labour was to try to fix one of these loopholes that a farmer in Limpopo is exploiting cheap and bonded labour, knowing that he won't run to the police or to the department. I think for us, Chair, we really want to see the Department of Home Affairs, the Department of Labour, putting pressure on businesses which employ illegal labour for the sake of cheap labour, knowing that the vulnerability of these workers. But then again, if you're looking to have to commit your suggestions, your Department of Labour has got very few inspectors. They're extremely overstretched. Just to deal with normal issues of safety and health, LRA, etc. Let alone to deal with a clothing factory in Newcastle employing labor from Taiwan or from Lesotho. And you will see horrific human rights abuse taking place, Chair, where your Taiwanese factory owner in Newcastle locks the gate with a padlock and then workers die in a fire afterwards. I think, Chair, maybe it was easy for us to mention the Anarchy Bilbao because it's well known to us. But again, Chair, there's nothing to stop the government from going door to door to check for criminals in every house. Last year, I think we've seen that we've been far too soft as a society for far too long. So that's part of the reason why we support the police cracking down across the board. Not just because I'm not Nigerian, but because of criminality across the board. Happy said Chair, and I think Honorable Tlamini, one thing which we have heard from members of us, your foreign-owned sponsorship, that are they able to undercut local businesses because they don't pay taxes, for example. If that's true, then that's obviously it's a serious problem. But then again, Chair, I think also there's an obligation upon us as South Africans, even when we go to Zambia, to Mozambique, we must also behave. Because you've seen problems in Zambia, Mozambique in particular, where ShopRite has been accused itself of dumping expired goods, because maybe the Zambians won't complain. So also, we mustn't complain, but yet we ourselves are also guilty of bad behavior. I think, Chair, to the second member.
Can I get clarity from the comment? What are you doing by saying you start to stop doing the dumping?
Okay, thank you, Chair. What I was specifically referring to, it's hard to pick on ShopRite, but I think there was quite a few media articles over the past few years where ShopRite itself in particular was accused of taking expired South African food produce and put it in their store, Maputo, and in Lusaka and so on. And there was even a public outcry and protest from consumers in those countries against their South African companies maybe feeling arrogant and abusing those consumers in those countries. So I was just saying, Chair, because we're raising an important issue, if we complain about something here, we must ourselves also show respect for neighboring countries when they sell goods to those countries. I've only heard about the case of ShopRite.
Can you please shop your life? Okay. I think that the point that was made by Honorable Chance needs to be taken into account in Kobasso's presentation. The point Honorable Chance was making was that COSATU is generalizing a lot of issues instead of becoming specific. I also had a problem with that because this point now of what happened in Mozambique as a result of whatever Chekas did is put here by COSATU as an issue for South Africans needing not to complain because a similar situation was created by a South African company in Mozambique. If something is wrong, it is wrong. It doesn't matter who has done it. So it cannot be corrected that COSAG would then come here and say the issue of selling goods that have expired cannot be raised because a company, a South African company, has done that in another country. I think it is a very incorrect way of approaching issues. And I would suggest to say COSAG can just withdraw that, because it is a wrong way of addressing problems. We cannot. It was wrong. If Chekas had done that, it was wrong. And it would then not mean that if a similar situation happens here in South Africa, caused by some owner, some of the spaza shops that are owned by foreign nationals, then South Africans must not raise that issue. It will be a very incorrect way of approaching issues.
Yeah, sorry, Chair, if I was misunderstood, that's not what I was saying. In fact, I was saying like the point that just like we want businesses to behave here, we must also behave on the ego of a side. Hopefully, so wrong is wrong, I just say, Chair. So we're on the same page as you. Chair, I think in terms of the second honourable member, I believe with the blue shirt sitting right. Matar, yes, sorry. Sorry, I'm bad with names, Chairperson. I think to maybe raise what the experiences some of our affiliates have raised, I think one can point to maybe three affiliates. I think FAWU has battled with the issue of migrant labour being exploited, being pitted against each other. Obviously, affiliates are responsible for dealing with members' issues. They can't deal with issues with everybody under the sun. So the FAO, the Food and Allied Workers Union, you know, the farm workers who belong to FAO. But I think we saw in the door about 3 years ago where there was an explosion of violence, and at the heart of that issue was the competition for scarce jobs between the South African labor from the Western Cape, between labor from Lesotho and labor from Zimbabwe. And our local employers were exploiting that, saying, I won't hire local labor from South Africa because of Lesotho, the Zimbabwean, he'll work for half the wages. So I think that's the explosion of the ended there. I think Sotaga raised similar issues about security guard as well. There is an increasing trend to avoid hiring South African labor, to hire foreign labor, and so on.
The question of clarity. When COSAT comes across that or COSAT Avenue, what role do you play in organizing the exploited workers who are from other countries? Because organizing is organizing, irrespective of where you come from. What is the response that you are getting when you are organizing those people in relation to them? Reversing the gains that have been made by the workers in relation to exploitative wages.
Yeah, no, thanks, Sachi, but that's quite a critical issue. Maybe there are two trends. One is that among many of the workers actually quite hostile or opposed joining a union. One is that a fear of being dismissed by the employer. If you see the troublemaker, if you join FAO, you see the difficult farm worker, must be dismissed. And of course, you know, most workers don't know most of the law. They don't know these fancy English things which start developed in Parliament very far from a farm in Lepalale, etc., or Durans. But one can that look one union which has historically, also for historical reasons, organized a lot of migrant workers is the National Union of Mine Workers. But that's a bit of a separate case because workers are living in the hostels, the isolated community, etc. I think they are really the ones over the many, many years which were able to overcome those difficulties. And in fact, one can even mention that a former president of NUM, James McCarthy, actually came to Lesotho. But I think, yeah, they were quite successful in that regard. I think maybe the raised issue of xenophobia and violence and South African xenophobic, etc. I think, look, we're not so much worried about the label, the wording attached to it. First, the word violence, that is clear. But again, I think the point we're making is that it's violence across the borders of Africa. For us, our analysis of violence is that this is a legacy of apartheid. We are too violent on too many issues, whether it's a service delivery protest, whether it's a soccer or even a rugby match, whether it's our approach to driving. We are just very violent. Some psychologists have said South Africa is studying the trauma of apartheid. So yes, the worst is from this targeted agenda of violence, but not only foreigners. I think that outbreak in KZN, it is about 6 foreigners, about 7 South Africans, so it's across the board. I think, Chair, look, for us, I think the real heart of the issue is the issue of the competition for scarce resources and businesses being willing to hire cheap labor at the expense of local labor for profit purposes. Yes, Chair, the Honourable, I think it is Charles, if I got the surname correct, is quite to mention Angola, Namibia, Mozambique booming economically, but of course they're coming from a much lower economic base. But nonetheless, as COSATU was deeply distressed that over the last 20 years, we've not been able to crack the nuts, so to speak, in terms of having large economic growth, but also good jobs. It's not an easy issue. I think, Chair, as COSATU, we don't want to come across as xenophobic. We understand migration is the nature of humanity. I mentioned the example of James McCarthy. One can even mention the example of Tito Sokobi, former ANC Treasurer General, who came from Plumtree to now Zimbabwe. But I think our point is about getting the balance right. South Africa cannot be responsible for the entire African continent's welfare and economic growth. There has to be a right balance. Our neighboring states do have to assist us. We're not saying let's apply North Korean approach to border control and kick everybody out. We don't want to see a situation where you have had in Nigeria where every 10 years or so they round up millions of Ghanaians and kick them out. We don't want that kind of situation. But at the same time, our members are correct to be frustrated, to complain that RDP houses have been sold in the community to Zimbabweans, to express frustration about employers hiring cheap labor, state labor, at their expense. It's difficult to talk to members of the workers not to be angry when they're faced with massive levels of unemployment, and they can see their job is being undercut by foreign labor. And of course, South African labor is already working for very low wages. Look, I think there is positive parts about migration, and we welcome that. But again, I think our point is about control. I think this is where we're on the same page with government on this issue. And of course, our first priority must be to South Africans. There has to be control. I think, Chair, our government was correct in the 90s, in the 2000s, to intervene in countries like DRC and Burundi to assist those countries to get back onto their feet. As part of identifying the solutions in Africa to avoid other countries' citizens feeling the need to flee their countries. Chair, some of the questions I've asked were a little bit difficult for us to speak too much on. But we can say about spousal shops that, you know, we all even surprised to remember that even the most rural village in Limpopo, if you have spousal shops owned by Somalis. And if you have a situation in Limpopo where you have 50% unemployment in villages, it is a higher wage to explode. Yeah, so in terms of the role of police and home affairs, look, there have been problems, but at the same time, I think we must also acknowledge and appreciate the big achievements in that regard. You know, since 1994, the police have more than doubled in size, from about 70,000 to, I think, today about 200,000. That's a big achievement. Obviously, there's much more work that needs to be done around skills, conditions of service, etc. And again, with home affairs, we have seen a turnaround in the last 5 years, which must be appreciated. But obviously, there is still much more work to be done. I think we saw the Minister of Home Affairs announcing plans to improve the refugee centres, which is also welcomed. And I think they also announced last week, or she informed us, they're planning to open refugee centres at the border post with the help of the United Nations, which I think also helped to assist many of the concerned there. Yeah, look, instead of the Honourable Member, yes, sorry. I'm a bit hard of hearing on here. Sorry, Chairperson. You know, because I'm pushing for us, I think many homes are political. And I think no matter how, if the government can do the most brilliant job in the world, it's 10 million jobs, if Nigeria is not going to assist us, if Bangladesh is not going to help us, hard to pick in those countries, we are never going to solve the problems. You know, it's almost a catch-22 for us. Look to the role of our members. The majority of police officers belong to POP crew, the majority of home affairs staff belong to NAHAU. I think they all be trying their level best under difficult conditions at times. I think many of the shops do play an active role in whistleblowing corruption or other problems. I think many of the issues that have raised actually aren't addressed in the new migration regulations for home affairs that were under last year, which had to provide some kind of control around businesses. But again, the challenge is always to implement those. There is quite a heavy impact, Chairperson, around the challenge upon our members. As you say, young people can find jobs, but they'll go to the restaurant, find Zimbabwean waitresses there, or they'll go to the garage, etc. And this problem is going to keep exploding again and again unless you get a hold of the situation. I think, Chair, we really want to push the home affairs and the Department of Labour increase their capacity, increase the staffing levels in the inspection departments, directors, to go and visit those businesses and to find and punish those businesses where they're guilty. Chairperson, we do welcome foreign direct investment, but again, we want it to be seen to be linked to decent local permanent work. Not simply, for example, the member raised about a Congolese security company bringing in Congolese workers. Chair, we would obviously recognize the difference between general refugees and migrant worker, and members correct, what is the political crisis that forces Nigerians to come to South Africa? Nigeria is a vibrant democracy, and there's nothing forcing people politically to flee Nigeria anymore. So I think one example in the new migration regulations the government has tried to assist is that when a foreign company comes in, if I'm correct, 80% of the workforce it hires must be local labor. So for us, that was a positive step forward. So I think really the main thing for us on our side is about implementing the existing laws. We know we made a lot of noise about having capacity as a developmental state. I think for us, we can get that right. It can really assist us in many regards. I'm trying to be quick here. I know time is running against. But I remember there's a lot of important questions I don't want to ignore them. But I'll try to just wrap up just for the share. Look, I think a lot of issues that we've raised overlapped each other or complemented each other. I think we've dealt with quite a few. I think for us, one of the causes of this violence, which flares up, is the issue of the two-tier labor system, so to speak, or about exploiting cheap illegal labor at the expense of local labor. And look, it is difficult for unions to take up a lot of those issues. Even farm workers, for example, it's sometimes organized farm workers because they're recruiting workers who are scared of the employer, they're scattered, it's difficult for a union to enter a farm, it's private property, there's so many obstacles to it. But I think Jake said, Honorable Clerk mentioned some examples for cathartic death campaigns, which is also quite a useful suggestion. We do have normal campaigns around combating violence, etc. In terms of cathartic death research, we have done some research. Not that it's perfect research. Even the example of Sathawa domestic workers, they themselves battle to organize. I think, just in conclusion, I think for us maybe the key issue is one is about businesses exploiting cheap illegal labor, knowing that labor is vulnerable and won't complain, versus local labor. I think we're sure that Department of Home Affairs and Labor Department has a key role to deal with that challenge. And of course, I think politically, we really want to see our neighboring states assisting our government to deal with this flooding of migrants into our economy. I think then we can then also deal with the simple challenges of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. I think that's basically it if I assist in matters. Thanks, Jefferson.
Do you want to add? Thank you, Jay. I would like to add on the issue of the trade union, okay? The trade union labor system. On that issue, we also regulated. In the case where we are supposed to organize in a company, we must introduce ourselves according to the regulations, the number of the members you want to join the NUM, the union, say. And then if in the case where an employer employs people from outside who are not who do not want to be unionized, then it means we are left aside as well. We can't organize within that company. That's the difficulty. Not unless the law would be more favorable to us as the union. But once again, in terms of sending out the messages to our support, sending out messages at community level. Obviously, our members, we are an alliance, constituent alliance, and we therefore encourage our members to participate politically outside their workplaces, in their communities. And then they know what the position of COSATU, that it states clearly that we are not part of the democratic body. Public attacks. We will mention this name because it's well known as that. It has been all over the media. And if you say xenophobia, that's what people understand. If you call it in any other name. But as anyway, we have sent out a statement saying we've named it as anti-working class attacks. Okay.
Do you mean that because the word xenophobia has been popularized, you are also accepting that South Africans are xenophobic? So the attack, because I see a contradiction in your presentation and what you are saying. But in your presentation, you trace back to colonialism,
as the root cause. You are coming far than all other people that have made presentations. You go way back. Even you are even chasing the artificial boundaries that have been created. But then, in your document, you are putting a lot of emphasis on xenophobia, which then becomes a contradiction of what you are presenting as the root causes, your understanding of what are the actual problems. You are the only structure that has actually traced back to say countries of origin must also deal with socio-economic issues. But you are exercising on xenophobia. We hear a contradiction. And we're using xenophobia because it is a word that has been popularized, or you are using the word xenophobia because you believe that there is xenophobia in South Africa. What xenophobia means? Extreme irrational hatred. That is what it is in the dictionary. Underline irrational. Extreme irrational hatred. That is what xenophobia means. You will just look at a person, this is a foreign object, I hate it. This is a foreign person, I hate that person. That is what xenophobia means.
Thank you, Chair. I'm afraid we do not believe that it exists. Because that document has stated clearly on that. But we are using the word xenophobia because it's out there on the media and people have read about it. Not because we accept it, that it is there. And we have condemned the attacks on migrant workers. But not because we agree that it is there. We don't believe that it is there. Especially in the industry that we are coming from. I understand that you are saying we are contracted to ourselves. But the language, obviously, it has to be relevant to what is said out there. Not because...
You have been invited by a portfolio committee that is probing violence against foreign nations, not xenophobia. And also, if a person calls me a dog, and I am given an opportunity to present who I am, will I then call myself a dog? Because other people are calling me a dog? Or I will correct that and say, I am not a dog.
Maybe just this, Chair. Look, I think what I'm saying is that, look, we don't think every South African is xenophobic, for example. Just like not every South African would be racist or sexist or xenophobic, etc. We do recognize there would be some xenophobic South Africans, just like there would be some racist South Africans. But I think, as you're saying, the broad majority of society is not xenophobic. And I think we also noticed that when the violence did erupt in Durban, if I get the figure number, numbers correct, it was about 13 people who were killed in Durban and Gauteng, give or take. And we noted it is about half foreigners, half locals. I think for us, look, violence is violence. It's a crime. And I think, Chair, that look, while we also mentioned the issue of South Africa being a violent society, it wasn't by accident. Before the South African violent society across the board, we were just too violent on so many issues. I think we think part of that is not because we love to be violent, but it's part of that culture that brought into us because of the apartheid abuses, where the government was just violent on any issue in the society. People used to responding in violence. But it's a problem, and I think that's why, Chair, we support a lot of the government measures over the past year, 2 years, to try to change society for the better. So around the government's kind of interventions around alcohol, feeding, and so on. I think that's basically our understanding, Chair, for that justice member. That's
with Honorable Matlakane, followed by Honorable Pumlwana, Honorable Ken, Honorable Chan, and then Honorable Pumlwana.
Really, the question that we are trying to establish in the document of the COSATU CEC, position is arrived at, which is called zone of fault. In the document, page 7, if you look at the heading, I've actually marked the number of how many times does the word xenophobia appear on the document. Now, the presentation says we don't agree with it, but it is what is being said out there. Now, I don't know whether I haven't had any a presentation that actually supports this perspective in the document. So maybe we could say to Beth Cosato that maybe they are persuaded that, in fact, this is a terrible shorthand that does not necessarily represent South Africa. In fact, does not even represent a Photoshop form. It is not. If it was, then there would have been a lot of problem on the top floor where workers are working from all different countries. So what I'm saying, therefore, Chair, is that perhaps it will be useful to hear whether they are persuaded from this engagement that from their standpoint and what they are presenting now, they veered away from the perspective they arguing to follow the soundbite, or whether maybe created soundbite about this xenophobia. Are they persuaded? Is it Cosato's standpoint, this particular point? I think that's really the question for me. And what I'm hearing slightly gravitating in defending the language, and I think it unjustifiably so, because there's not anything to justify the defense. And I think we can rest with this thing quickly if it's simply a slippage, a language slippage, as informed by the media or anybody who is in fact owning the quotation.
Thank you, Sir President. I think I covered by Honourable Makatlat on my second, because the reason why now, especially that you have said that because the media is saying this, I can't go to say it because I know Kosato, as I come from Kosato. When you say that, we used to say, let's not listen to the media because you know what media, what media is, everything. That's what we know as workers. So now to say, we're saying the word because the media says so and our people know that. So it is worth it when you look at it there. Also, you are saying make our workplace and community xenophobia free. Really, it means that the word xenophobia is really entrenching it now as compared to of late, though we know that we were saying there's a propaganda in media. Now, you are no more knowing the propaganda. I think really you are just accept that you don't accept the name xenophobia. Because even on the second presentation, it is clear that they understand xenophobia, they understand it. Because they even said that South Africans are xenophobic. That's what Sango said from her thing. So meaning that they understand, but it was as well Cosato insist on the way xenophobic, on the way xenophobic. Thank you, sir. Honourable Popa.
I'm not sure whether the gentleman did not understand. I thought his language is English. The meaning of the xenophobia. Or is he saying that he speaks to that? Because if he does, then what we are at loggerheads, we're not talking about the same thing. Or shall we write as a submission that Cosato is regarding that there is xenophobia? Are they saying that we must write that down? Or are they saying that they have been using it because it was used generally? Or are they saying that Cosato actually says? South Africans, there are people who are violent and the people who are not violent in South Africa. So there are people who are xenophobic words xenophobic. I wonder, clarity. Are they saying the word xenophobic was mistakenly put in there? Or are they saying it was deliberate and that this is the belief? Or are they saying that maybe they didn't understand the meaning of it? Or is it they do understand the full meaning of it, but they still stick to it that it is xenophobic? So that you like what they are saying, this is their submission. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And I hadn't had the opportunity of reading the submission before your presentation, but having read it, it's clear that you're essentially, what you're doing is you're creating a Marxist interpretation of migration and victimhood. That's what it is. And you're saying that all migrants are victims, and you're trying to put them into the same category as the workers, the exploited workers, but they're not exploited workers. They're opportunists. They're people that have left their country to look for a better life. They're entrepreneurs. They're people who are escaping, you know, convicts and oppression and all the rest of things, and they're trying to find a place that they can actually ply their trade in a free society. And virtually all the societies that they left are not free societies. And I'd like to question your interpretation of exploitation. Would you rather be exploited and have a job, or not exploited and not have a job? What you're saying is that the people that are working for what you say are slave wages are being exploited, that they're willingly offering their labour to earn that money, and in doing so possibly are putting citizens out of a job. So we have a contradiction here. We have a deep irony that we have so-called exploited people who are earning money, and those that are earning money are unemployed, are not exploited. And I again repeat, would you rather be exploited and earn money in a job, or unexploited and not have a job? This is the key problem that we have in the country. We have 8 million unemployed people, and we have 11.5 million employed people. Only 40% of the people in this country have a job, work. It should be 60%. This comes back to the point that I was saying earlier about regulating an economy whilst also allowing an economy to grow so that people can get work. Now, this issue is related to what migration is all about, and the impact that the migration has had on local people, South Africans, is often violent. It's violent reactions to lack of opportunity, lack of access to resources. And South Africans have expected over 20 years what they call the liberation dividend, the dividend of fighting for democracy for a couple of generations. Now that democracy comes, they've got the vote, they don't have a vote they can use. They don't have freedom they can use. So this is the debate we should be having in this country, is what are we doing to create economic opportunity for people, and that includes migrants, on a level playing field where the human rights of all are protected and preserved. Thank you.
Sir, I just wanted to say, can you please correct
me? You may not say too strong, Honor of Islam, you will speak after Islam.
Thank you, Chairperson. So, Chairperson, you know, it becomes very difficult for me even to call this document a research document. So, rather, let me just say a compiler of the document. The reason being, like we said earlier on, Chairperson, there is so much contradiction. It is so much ahead. So, I'll just quote Chairperson. This document, it says there is some intensification competition between workers, which creates bitter division and induces xenophobic sentiment. For God's sake, really. Now, Chairperson, it even says the political elites, they exacerbate the situation to a point where it affects the service delivery. So, I don't see how are we getting some assistance on this. And then they blame the media. And in this instance, really, it's not the media. It's the person who wrote the document. He is reflecting what is in his mind. I can't say this is potato. Because if you think Kodak is some people sitting there, it's us, the community. I am the Kodak member. And it doesn't have, it's not what I believe in. Now, I am saying, Chairperson, the media can have its own play or role to play on this, but for now, let us blame the media. The writer of this needs to tell us, the Kostachi, we know, its main key role is to create jobs, is to ensure that we decrease unemployment, is to ensure that the conditions of employment are according to the LRD. Now, if we are getting a presentation chapter which says we're not worried about the labor xenophobia, what are you saying? What does the economy say? Can the way you portray your country for tourism, for investors, eh? That's why we get the jobs. And the contractor comes and says, you know what is the portrayal? Chairperson, there's a problem here.
All I was going to say, that I think the Kostachi people need to be protected against the attacks of, I think we need not discuss the political differences here. We need not come and say this is a Marxist different man. That people should do is what we should be together. I think my little friend here at the back did much, I think, honorable. He is now coming with what we should discuss in the house, where this one brings that what we should be discussing. And I think what we need here is to hear what do people think. What does labor think about this particular program? Because when we bring in our recommendation, we have the advantage of getting their views. We can't be telling people here that it's a right if people are exploited as long as they get the boy. We can't be discussing that. They must get their views, or we don't tell them. I think that as you correctly said to me, Honorable Rumpo, that that is not the time to discuss that issue. You forgot to tell you forgot to tell him that we're not supposed to discuss that matter. To tell Manoko, Nawahara Saban, Abazuslet, please. Thank you very much.
To correct something, maybe it goes back to what we're saying about the media. I don't want to say it's not media this time, because it's always about taking deaths. We made an oversight. Only 2 deaths because of being a death. As for a foreign national and a local national. Who was shot by the foreign national? Whilst on the street, just moving along on the street, doing nothing. And then again, at Alexandria, there was only one national, local national who was so, and the 13 was talking about, it means that now these people are relying on media. Media is still media. Thank you, Chairperson.
I also wanted to correct something. That, the document, what we want to understand from Kostachi is that Kostachi's understanding of the attack against foreign national. Violent attacks against foreign nationals. And if Kostachi is talking about xenophobia, Kostachi must tell us whether in their assessment they come to a conclusion that the conflict that exists between South Africans and immigrants is xenophobic. And they must tell us how that has happened and affected local South Africans and immigrants as quickly, so that we can understand who take the attack as xenophobic, if they are xenophobic. And if you are tracing the conflict, that's the way you are tracing it. The uneven levels of development in Africa, the social and political and economic issues in the African continent, which results with some people having to leave their countries and come here. Or you are tracing it to the economic opportunity that exists in South Africa, which attracts people to come to South Africa. The political stability that exists in South Africa, which attracts people to come to South Africa, you must also. And then, identify the loopholes in the system, which then creates a situation where if someone migrates because of economic opportunities, that is done legally or illegally. That is what we want to hear. And then point to issues that would need to be addressed. Because we cannot restrict the movement of people, but we also have to acknowledge the fact that those movements are informed by a number of issues. And those movements create a number of problems. We want to hear what are the problems that are created by those movements of the people, and how can we then mitigate? So we are talking here, the violence is an indicator that there is something wrong. Then we move to say, what is it that is causing the violence? And what is it that is causing, if people are moving to South Africa, what is it that is causing people to move to South Africa? And how are those people integrated in South Africa, which will create a problem? I even think that even the name of the portfolio committee was supposed to be called, it is an ad hoc joint committee on probing the violence between South Africans and foreign nationals. Not to say violent attacks against foreign nationals, because what we have found out there is that not only foreign nationals were attacked, South Africans died. And in most cases, it is the South African that died first, and then the South Africans revolted. In both KwaZulu-Natal, a 28-year person was walking up, along the street, and there was a conflict between the people that were fighting in foreign nationals and in a shop, and the foreign national took a gun and shot and killed the South African. That is what happened in KwaZulu-Natal. Again, in Gauteng, we were told the same thing. Young people came into a shop, looted goods, and a foreign national took a gun and shot and killed one of them. That's possible violence. So, the lives of South Africans must also not be seen as the chief. It should not be that it's only the life of a foreign national in South Africa that is more important. Life, whether it is the life of a South African or a life of a foreign national, life is life. If we don't examine issues to that level, we will find ourselves in a situation where the 34 miners that were killed become more important by the 10 people that died before those miners in America. Get into. Yes.
No, no, thanks, Jen. Look, unfortunately, this one word is kind of just sidetracked or the point that we're trying to make. I think, Jen, the last few points you raised basically similar to what we were saying. Look, a crime is a crime. It doesn't matter whether it's against one person or against 10 million, but the crime is still a crime. I think to the Honorable Flamini, unfortunately, she's not here. Yeah, this is not my personal document yet. So I don't think that we were invited as Kusaja to come speak to the members. If I'm not happy with that document, well, that's unfortunate. The first part of the document is from the Kusaja Central Executive Committee. It is a statement issued by, not by myself, an individual chair, but the Kusaja CEC in June when this eruption took place in Durban and Gauteng. That CEC includes 18 affiliate unions, from the Mine Workers Union to the Food and Allied Workers Union to Pop Group, SATU, etc. So, yeah, who doesn't like it? Well, my apologies, but it's still a Kusaja document. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't understand this one Kusaja. The second part of the document says, unfortunately, maybe. Look, I had to actually an appendix check from page 6 onwards. That's when you see a lot of this word which has caused a lot of excitement of distractions and phobias play. So if you look at the top of the chair, it's actually a resolution of a Kusaja Eastern Cape Top Stewards Council on xenophobia. They show that word xenophobia. For myself, chairperson, as a foreign language English speaker, I don't really worry too much about the words my colleagues use, because I understand not everyone's first language is English, etc. I think for us the fundamental issue is why a crime is a crime. Two, we don't think that the 50 million South Africans are xenophobic. But obviously within any society there will be problems of xenophobia, of racism, of sexism, whatever. If you look at the document itself, it highlights a lot of challenges, from tribalism to sexism, etc. Now, we know that tribalism, for example, is a minority of a problem in South Africa, right? But doesn't mean we wouldn't put effort to make sure it doesn't grow, okay? Now, for us, Chetleton, the violence which took place in Durban, in Johannesburg, etc., as we say, I want to say that the majority of us is affected with South Africans first and foremost. So again, Chair, not for us, we don't have image of South Africa on fire, of hundreds of foreigners being killed, etc. Not like that. But again, Chair, why we came here to share our understanding that our understanding of the problem is that there is a problem of a flood of migrants coming to South Africa. It's putting too much strain on South Africa's resources. It's a mathematical fact. If you have a country which can barely afford to take care of 50 million people, we can't afford to add 5 million, 6 million, whatever the stats are, of other country citizens, one. It's going to make our problem that much more difficult. But again, I'm not saying chase people out, etc., but must be a right balance, must be controls in place. I think, sir, what we're also saying is that our neighboring states must assist us. Other countries must assist us. Bangladesh, take a nice neutral example. It can't sit with its arms folded, not worry about the impacts that their socioeconomic challenges are having upon us. Without sounding funny to Bangladeshi, but South Africa's first and foremost priority is to serve South Africans. So Kusaja's first and foremost priority is to serve Kusaja members. It's very difficult for us to organize, on a more family from the right, ask what do we do to organize other migrant workers. It's difficult for us to force people to join Kusaja. People join on their own voluntary basis. And we're not assisting workers join this, but again, we know it's a complex problem. It's not an easy solution or problem for government to solve. We don't have delusion that government can wage a magic wand and solve this thing tomorrow. But again, from our side, is that a suggestion? Government has always implemented the laws without fear or favor across the board. Our neighboring state must assist us, and the non-neighboring states. Businesses must also assist us, Chair. I think, Chair, on the last issue that, the impact upon our members is that it does suppress wages. But if you have, for example, young workers from Google to water workers, waitresses to the waterfront, they will be frustrated and angry if they find their job is now being replaced by the owner by cheaper labor from Zimbabwe because he knows that labor won't complain to Home Affairs of the top labor because of that and be expelled. And that's the frustration of our members. Not that anyone is hostile to Zimbabweans, but you must sort out your own home first, if I could be that inclusion chair for you. I think, yeah, inclusion chair, look, maybe make an easy example. South Africa is not a racist society, right? The majority of South Africans are not racist. It doesn't mean we won't spend effort to combat racism, even if it's just one case or two cases, we'll put effort into it. So I think we're trying to assist members to get in that balance. I'm not saying South Africa is xenophobic. But it doesn't mean that one doesn't make an effort to solve whatever problems crop up as when they crop up, Chairperson. Yeah, I'll search out my assisted members to understand our position, Chair. Thanks.
Yes,
thank you, sir, and the community as a whole. Firstly, Umar Dlamini, I think Umar Dlamini, wanted to me to elaborate in the issue of the unregulated resources. I was referring in the issue of the business that have been done, because most of the people that are there within our community, they work within the community, like selling, you know, your brother's father shop, I don't know how many shops have you got, they make it, it's about 100 plus, but the population, the population is about plus minus 40,000 currently. So, what would we hope is that all the businesses that are there, we should have an office, or maybe a place, like if you want to open a tavern in these days, you've got to go to the government. They give you a document that this is, in order to sell liquor, this is what you need to do. If you meet those requirements, then you're allowed to sell liquor. For example, as I said, you plus minus 4,000 people, but only four shipments are legal in our area. Only four that have got permits to sell liquor. But the rest can be bought. You know, there's like 25 more, but those have been harassed by cops every day. But I think that if there can be those kind of criteria, what do we do? Are people are selling food. Some of them are possessing a lot of health risk, sleeping in between these groceries in the same shop where tomorrow we need to go and get bread from. So if you go there through the night, you're going to sleep in between the maize meal, or still have to buy that the next day. So if all the businesses that are there, only except the taxi business, because taxi business is regulated by the PRE. So it's right there, that one is regulated on a yearly basis. But all the other businesses, whatever you are selling, it should be able to be regulated so that you don't see a shop today here. Yeah. The next thing tomorrow, there's another one, it's that one. You go sleep, there's a third one. There's the whole street shops. So we need to know that if you want to open your own touch up, go to that office and say, I'm planning to do so. Then the office will tell you what you should be doing or what are the indications of the business that you want to do. And I'm very sorry then that my questions are not more than one, two. I only take that in my meetings, one, two, three, because I address them as they are. So I know that whoever has asked one question, then he's going to know when the question is relevant, because a member has asked. I'm sorry about that one. Number two, there was a question where I was asked that this word that I don't like, calling of the people, thinking that people are in how they have got hatred against the others. If ever that happened in Albay, no, there was a foreign national that was killed in Albay. I think I mentioned that when you guys were in Hungary. That was a person from Congo. The person was killed out of the people who were doing a robbery. It was just a crime activity that took place, and unfortunately that person was killed. So the media, because that didn't happen near to the main road, there was a couple of people who were right on the valley. When I say on the valley, the near from here to Valley Road and Hamburg. So it's how you differentiate Hamburg. But those people who were there, they took pictures, posted them to the highest office of the media. That in Hamburg, is an attack against foreign people. Without coming and asking what took place, let's go out and tell the media, whoever was there out there, MC, Ken Plato was there, to announce the same thing. We told him that this was not an attack against a foreign national. This could have been South African, but the person was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And a criminal pounced on him and took whatever they can and they chose. But because it was a foreign person, people thought people were attacking people against other countries. It was never the case. You would then remember, Chair, when we were in Hamburg, that particular day when the committee came there, there was a guy, if you remember, his name was Richard. That guy is from Congo. He was the cousin of that guy who happened to put on that particular tragedy. And then he was the one who was saying, there is no attack against foreigners in Hamburg. And I think that the people who have taken that issue to the highest level to try and assert it so that it can be portrayed as people with a problem. There was a question that the people from the other countries bringing negative impact or positive. In my own judgment, they bring both. Some of them are coming for good reasons, who come to study. Some of them would come and do business in a peaceful environment, in a proper way, which is recognized by the country. But some of them, but I would even say more, of the people are coming for shady business, and those who are coming for shady business, some of them, they work without judgment and all these things. That affect the South Africans. Mm-hmm. That's what makes the people think other way around. Because I must tell you, if you've been working for a particular house and for 2 years, you've been there, the gardener or driver, whatever you were doing there. Here comes this person, this owner of the house used to pay me 100 rand. He pays for the lady next to me another 100 rand for cleaning the house. I'm living outside. Suddenly the guy comes and says, I can do this for 90 rand. I'll even take your children to school and walk across along the beach for 90 rand. He cuts down 110 rand, and eventually that's more than what I can do. Then the people tend to shift their focus from employing locals to employ foreign people, because they do earn something out of that. They want to go back to the issue of the slavers, which was employed by the previous government into the society of South Africa. So I think that is a very bad element that they do. This is why I have a feeling that every business, irrespective of any business, if a business is employing people from foreign countries, should be visited on a yearly basis. Before the end of the year, there should be people who are going there as officials to go and say, we want to see your staff. We want to see how many people are working here and what are they doing. Are they qualified to be here and all those things? Maybe we can then go somewhere with that. In the issue of economic constraints, what can we do to achieve those things? I think it's not much that I can say, because the government is doing what they can. It's an issue of that the people must just all the things that the government is trying to direct towards young people and South Africans in general must be delivered to the people who are supposed to be having them. You know, like for your young people, there's a lot of programs that I know of that are blessing them. But it depends if them they take the initiative and they build something like that, because you must know that you always do something best when you want, but when you don't want, you can't be forced. There was a question where I was asked, what can we do to assist in the violence that had taken place in the previous areas? Talking now from a leading perspective in the community, I can say this way: we as a communities, we can help by dealing with our own people in our own areas. Not to go out there and attack, no matter who is it, but that's not to attack. When you've got a problem, I prefer that we need to come down. This is what I mean, the structure of something. Whoever's got a problem must come forward. We sit, we discuss it. If we think it's hard on, but we cannot reach or make a position between us, then we should employ the law to go now to court and try and those things. But if we can do that, where we say to our people, do not attack people, whatever, just don't attack the people, especially that people now these days, you must know, when people say there's always disagreements. And if now I fight with a person, or maybe a person in our community fight with that one, because it's from the different countries, people see it that way. They don't see it as a problem that just arose for that particular time. So I think I can help that by calming our people and saying they shouldn't do what is expected of them. But also then, to add to that, we would love to see the government being, you know, being harsher than they do, if they are harsh enough, to the people who done the documents to in the country. You know, the people who are here illegally, they are intransferable. We live with them there. Today you see this one, tomorrow you don't see this. You are being told that this person over here, he does something wrong. The person is, we are told that he's nowhere to be found. I mean, the person is still in the country and is going to do something wrong in the other area. So what I'm saying is, all the people here should be known. I once visited a country outside South Africa. When I was there, I stayed 2 or 3 hours in the airport after, you know, disembarking from the flight, because I'm interrogating the airport. Why are you here? What do you want? How much have you got? Are you selling anything? Can you search everything? You know, all those things were done terrifyingly. You know, the people, the other ones would come, the other ones would come in, the other ones would go, because they wanted to know exactly why I was there. After 3 hours, someone came, the one that was visiting, said, no, I'm waiting for that person. So I took it very bad when I was there. But as I stayed there for the next 2-3 weeks, I started realizing that not these people are safeguarding themselves, you know, to the people who just come and just pick up anywhere. So in that sense, I think there's government is doing great, so, but there's a lot, you know, more that can be done. And I know that we cannot achieve these things in one day. We need to say what has been done, but this has tried to safeguard our communities and our children, because we must remember, the children is going to be leading the country the next day, so we need to make sure that what we do today translate to the future. I think there's only one more question. There's two. There's a question by Mr. Honorable Ramatlakane there, where he was asking about a program that was happening in 2008 in Hope. I would say, no, maybe it's not continuing. The reason I'm saying this is my first year as a chaplain, and I have not had anything of sort. Besides that, everyone who does business that does it individually. So I want to say, maybe people discontinue with that. But then, I also want to recommend that we need not to re-establish that. Though I don't know, because if it was a good thing, I should have been told by it that the story we've been doing everything, it was great. But the only thing that I'm asking, I think, is the first and foremost for now, is to ask the government, send some officials, the people who are selling anything of sort of a business, apart from Shizanyamas, because it would be very difficult to do that. Because they go there, they make a fire, they burn the meat in the evening, they collect everything, they go sleep. So you cannot mark everything as they there. But all the other businesses, if there can be people who can go out there and ask them, where are you from? How long have you been here? How long have you been doing business? What are your, is your contribution to the South Africa or the economy? Most people don't believe that they're taxed. I don't know if they're paying tax, but these people have been told, they still have to tell. The last bit that I need to answer is from Honorable there, you ma'am. You have asked something about what can be done to keep the kind of environment that you've got in terms of the businesses and the house staying out there and all. I thought the very first thing that I can say is to go out and do research in terms of how many businesses, or, you know, because you know, most spaza shops, they image while I'm here, one building is open the other one. So if I brought you 100 in one already while I'm sitting here. So this is what, if the government can maybe regulate those things, then we're going to know in the community that we've got 30 shop owners, you know. So that if any other person wants to bring a counter-ship or selling as well, must go in their particular area and say, this is what I'm intending to do. And then the person should be asked, are you able to provide this and that and that and that? Yes, then we can come and look at your place. This should be like a way to go, so that not just anyone does as places. It's all right. This is why you find that there's confusion all over the show, because it's the issue of regulation. That issue is very speaks volume. We need to know. I live in Albany. Every day, as I said, there's a new shop. And if it was according to me, I would be happy to know who's doing this work, so that if there's anything, if we need a database for us, that how many people are doing business, what do they do, I can present it to you. Just like I said to you, there's 15, when I get it, there's plus 5 already. So we need a way. That can help us, I think. And then we have a committee who are willing to try and have a lot of meetings and discussions with the people who say that if this is the government what they want, then this is what we need to implement, try and make sure that we are safe and we don't have problems of fighting amongst each other. Thank you.
Is there anything that anyone would want to say?
Honorable Chair, I really don't want to go back to the level of discussion, but I do want to go back to this because I think it's important for our process. And I, with respect to COSATU and COSATU, the document and the presenter of the document, and I respect that it's a document that is presented, not individual document. But I just want to be absolute certain that COSATU delegation here present here with this engagement, they believe that South African, doesn't matter the degree, the number, do they really believe that South African has a xenophobia? Because it's important that it is not maybe a few pages, it is that belief. If it is a belief, then we know that the Federation with 2 million people believe there is, whether it's 50,000 people, 10,000 people, they believe that South Africans are, in fact, as a development. Because if they do, then we would need to say what's the next step to understand that perspective from COSATU, what is it based on? If they've done the research, then we must say, let's have made this piece of work that has been done that has conclusively concluded on this aspect. Then I think we'll be getting somewhere. But if it's a manner of speaking cannot be reduced as facts. It's something that we can hold on. So that must be clear as well from the perspective. Because I think that the borrowing of languages or borrowing of words happens. It is nothing, I mean, we can't say it's a crime. But I think when we get to serious discussions like these, we've got to say, now we are persuaded. As an individual, I'm persuaded. As a collective, I'm persuaded. But it is not for me to change it. It's the process that has to go into this in order not to convince that there is no such a thing. Because if there is, let's list 20 instances where this has been proven conclusively that it is in fact xenophobic act. So that at least we are on the same page. So that's all I'm trying to pursue this issue, because I did note that the presentation from the COSATU was almost like cleverly throwing out this comment as almost like it's an issue. It's actually an issue. It's actually a serious issue. It's actually a serious language issue that we need to get through. I agree that we need to get out of it. Obviously, it is in fact structural, it is finding that it is. So that's why I'm pursuing this, because I think if we write a report, and we need to be clear about particular aspects of perspective of COSATU. But if I'm not persuading him enough. I will leave it there. I will let comment on this there, but haven't made a statement that actually is not.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just to assist quickly that it's for the sake of reporting and so on, clarifying, etc., etc. The opposition that the overwhelming majority of South Africans are not xenophobic. We don't see it as a kind of a big wildfire out of control. You would always find an individual here or there who might be whatever persuasion, etc., etc. But for us, if you assist the committee chair, we're very clear the majority of South Africans are not xenophobic. If you want to back that up with cases, then you would have much more cases of xenophobic violence all over the show. That's why we mentioned specifically that those cases of violence in Durban and Gauteng, was it June or July, whichever. From our side, the majority of those South Africans were affected. So then when the chef hasn't mentioned, the first person who was a victim of violence was a 12-year-old South African walking past, whatever the story was. That is the committee chairperson. Thanks.
I think chairperson, yes, maybe we say we were wrong to keep this judgment. We should have taken this judgment. Because really, all that we have taken to be discussed, now we can't be respected. Maybe I can propose that if we can get a document that talks to what you think as parliamentarians. Because we don't want to see this name in our documents. But because we already discussed, we can say now we are rejecting. But we should have taken this statement, maybe that's what I noticed now. As yes, of course, we know that this is a collective decision, but we are still saying we don't agree with this name, therefore we must get a correct document. First, to say to correct this name, write another document that relates to what we are saying as parliamentarians, not to see the name of xenophobia. Thank you, sir.
We don't have a sort of a we organize an asambo a helping some way to Ima with Adla Kela Led so my dear doing a helping. A helping is it the Mato Manadesh over Abara Seven, so about the Seven Nakishis Abara Seven Seven Pila over the Kalen Bill Shala Ekishi.
Entirely wrong for the committee to muzzle a document that is submitted to us particularly since that document actually was published in June, even though some members of the committee may not agree with its contents, and may have a view that xenophobia may or may not exist, but this, the fact remains that this is a submission. There was a submission in both the document and an oral submission from Mr. Bart, which had some internal contradictions, let us say. But you know, that's for the committee to deliberate on and evaluate in terms of our final report.
Thank you, Chair. No, I think one of the chances actually answered himself. That what the deliberation better came to, because they are supposed to take this in the committee. Then we engage all the analysis of the information that was gathered and given to us. It's not for us now to decide whether or not.
I also did not hear Honorable Senior say we should withdraw the document. She said we have already discussed it, and as a result, we cannot withdraw it. Honorable Ranapos, cover. Okay. Thank you very much for all the submission. I think what is causing the confusion in the consultancy document is that we are asked, we're threatened to consult you because consultancy is a federation of unions. And it would look at issues from a global perspective. And look at what happens in Gauteng, what happens in KwaZulu-Natal, and what has happened here. I think what has caused confusion in this submission is that there is an appendix document of a workshop that took place in Eastern Cape, which was not actually supposed to be here. Yes. In that document, of course, that there is an appendix document of a workshop. And what is put there? Yes. This one. Yes. On page 6. The workshop has to be in the Eastern Cape. And before this, it is an analysis of COSAT that is giving a global understanding of issues. So I think that it was a mistake for COSAT to submit a workshop document to the Eastern Cape and not submit documents from all other provinces and just put it out to the Eastern Cape. Yes. That is what has happened. But also, I think that it also gives us an understanding of what happens when what happens as a result of labeling something. Because nowhere in the document it said that a consultant in the Eastern Cape had done an investigation and came to a conclusion. They were running a workshop. And even to make that workshop a xenophobic resolution of the Eastern Cape workshop on xenophobia. Maybe we are discussing a document that is, we are not even supposed to discuss when, if the workshop they were having was a workshop on xenophobia. Because we are not tasked to probe xenophobia. We are tasked to probe the violence against foreign nationals. And the workshop in the Eastern Cape, we don't know what informed that workshop which was discussing xenophobia. But having said that, this is a part of the consultation that we will deal with when we are discussing the report. I want to thank both the consultation
and imizamo yethu. In the Kubasi document, there are very key issues that Kubasi is raising. Issues of socio-political and economical situations. COSATU is raising the issue of capitalism. Because capitalism is driven by profit. That is why in a country where there are laws, there are unions that are negotiating wages, you will then find people employing illegal people in the country, knowing very well that they are illegal, and paying them slave wages and justify that. It's capitalism that does that. It's okay because this person is accepting that. That's how rude capitalism is. That's how exploitative capitalism is. And if we reject this document, we will be doing a very wrong thing. Because Kusaki is raising fundamental issues in this document. Never mind the use of the word xenophobia. The only submission that is created, artificial borders that were created in Africa, is this document. There's no other submission that has talked about that. Also, there's no submission that has analyzed the conditions of workers and if we go, Mina, I live in Akashia Park. So the mall that I usually go to, because it allows the way women go home, is the canal walk. And at the canal walk, when I'm very tired and unable to cook for myself, I go to Ocean Basket. And at Ocean Basket, almost everybody that was there is a foreigner. I even know their name. I also discussed with them when they came to South Africa. What were you doing? Which country you come from? At Ocean Basket, since 1999, when I became a member of parliament, I only met two South Africans at Ocean Basket. And that is really. So, socio-economic problems of other African states cannot reverse the political gains that have been made in South Africa in terms of workers. It should not be correct that whatever is happening in other countries can be allowed to reverse the struggle of workers in South Africa. And that is what the document of Kusasi is writing. And Umama Lo, who has spoken last, is also raising the same issues. He said there were fishermen in Port Bay that are South African who would fish and weigh their fish and charge the price determined by them. And then they are no longer fishing today. Because the foreign nationals go and fish and then go and say to the one who has to buy, how much are you going to buy for? So the seller is not determining the price. It's the buyer that is determining the price.
And the reason for the seller not to determine the price is because the seller is desperate and it is illegal in the country. Then reversing all the political gains that the South Africans fought for. So we can't then say, the document that was that, that's because they're not xenophobic. As far as we beg. So we beg the document that was that. And we want to thank COSATU for the presentation. Well, of course, COSATU would not make any presentation that deals with the spaza shop because COSATU doesn't operate on the spaza shop. COSATU would not present our views, our fishermen, because COSATU does not operate in the business person law, small business. It has to be represented by another Raja, Abonafco, or whoever. That represents small businesses. Because that is going to speak about workers, because it doesn't mean that there are no problems at the workplace, there are problems. The only shortcoming that I have in COSATU's document is that I was hoping that a COSATU would have analyzed which sectors are mostly affected. Where, like, in KwaZulu-Natal, the problem was started by in Gwajima store. And remember, I must say that the workers from Gwajima have written they want to come here and make a presentation where they will not be threatened to speak to us. Because when we went to that shop, they were not able to speak to us. We only spoke to the employer, and the employer even denied that there was anything that ever existed there. So, what we are expecting from COSATU, and if COSATU can still find it in their interest to make a written submission, to just give us a picture of what are the sectors that are affected by this issue of jobs. That the pattern of South Africans being displaced in their jobs by foreign nationals who are upsetting, because actually they said the foreign nationals are upsetting slave wages. They even said slave wages. That's what they said. In a certain country, they said so. Foreign nationals are upsetting slave wages. And then I can testify to that because I have a son that stays with me here in Goodwood. Same university. He wanted to do a job. He applied to his job. He was youth and was hired in one of the restaurants. On the day when he arrived for the job, he was told that he will not earn anything. He will only get the commission, and he said thank you, goodbye. But the foreign nations are not saying thank you, goodbye. They accept that they can work and only live on tips. Because when they come, their first job is a car guard, where there is no actual salary. They accept the tips. So they can live on tips because they can live in one room of a hotel. So, I just want to thank you for the presentation. It gave a broader perspective of the socio-economical and political conditions, and I also want to thank Isanko from Ms. Amoyed. Thank you very much. I think we have been given a new program. We had to change some of the dates because the minister, the interministerial committee would not come. I just want to get a confirmation with the date reflected here, the 10th of September, has been confirmed. The day confirmed. Okay. All right. Thank you. I declare the meeting closed. Honorable Chair.
I won't delay the committee much further. I just wanted to point out that the sitting of House on the 1st of September is a very important sitting because we have a debate on the formation of an ad hoc committee for the impeachment of the president. Now, in order for that debate to be concluded, there will be a vote, and the House, if it's, you know, there's a three-line whip essentially, and I'm sure it will be for all parties. So I just think that maybe the Secretary should just see what time that debate is due to take place and see if we can make arrangements to, you know, change the sitting of this committee. Because we can't possibly miss that debate. And I'm sure you would understand that we only need a 30% portion of the House to vote for the ad hoc committee, and that's going to be tough to both sides. So perhaps you could just take those to come, Chair. Thank you.
I think that we have done a health meeting when there is going to be voting that is taking place, and we sit next to where the next to the plenary. So we will make those arrangements, but we can't delay the sitting of this committee any longer, because very soon there will be again constituency weekend, whatever, and we won't have time to conclude our weekend. We can't ask for a second extension. We will fight, we will ensure that we sit closer to where the House is. And it actually is that preferable to each one is that's what we want to do, because we want to go against it. So we want to do it.